Hey everyone, welcome to the Blue Takeover podcast. Yes, we started our very own podcast. As episode one, we'll be covering muscle size versus muscle strength. Okay, so we have quite the stacked lineup today for this discussion. Before we begin, I'll let everybody introduce yourselves. Gentlemen, go ahead.
All right, so I'll start it off. I'm Taylor Atwood. I am a 74 kilogram, 163 pound powerlifter in the USAPL, three-time national champion, silver medalist, IPF and 2016 Worlds. I've also played football pretty much my entire life, very athletic background, played basketball as well. I also am the general manager of the Strength Guys. And my role outside of the Strength Guys is I work for IBM as a financial analyst.
Awesome. I'm John Downing. I am a coach here at the Strength Guys. I am an 83-kilogram USAPL powerlifter. Outside of powerlifting, I am a high school social studies teacher. And my big passion, though, is coaching the Ohio State University Buckeyes and their powerlifting team.
I'm Jason Trombley, and I'm the president and co-founder of the Strength Guys Incorporated. I've been coaching powerlifting and bodybuilding for the past 4 years now, and I've coached athletes from the grassroots level of the sports up to the world and international levels.
So the topic for today is muscle size versus muscle strength. Taylor, so what's your as an athlete, what's your experience with this topic? Off-season wise, we do a lot of hypertrophy work. How does that translate over for maximal strength for you?
So that's actually a big component of what we were trying to do leading in the world. Jason Trombley is my coach, and I was injured pretty much after Nationals of 2015 going into Worlds 2016, June. And we couldn't do much as far as a lot of strength work. So what Jason told me was a bigger muscle essentially gives more strength. So what we did was we worked a lot on my hamstrings, my glutes, did a lot of hypertrophy there, and we kind of worked around the injury. And he actually posted something on our Instagram page, so if you guys want to go check that out, it was a few posts ago, but it was on my glutes and my legs, and you can
go beautiful check glutes.
Out my beautiful post dedicated just for Taylor's.
And you can kind of see the progress I made there, and you can also see the progress that I made on my squat. We pretty much dedicated our entire off season to building my posterior, and it paid off. And tremendous strength. I set the American record in the 74 kilogram class with a 260 kilogram squat, tying the world record in the IPF. And you can just it pays a ton of dividends as far as strength goes. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is a bigger muscle in turn does have more strength. So just from experience, I think it's paid a ton of dividends in my progress and strength. So,
and you mentioned in your off season, how long was your off season? So like, did you just work on hypertrophy for like 3 weeks, a month, 3 months?
This was 6 months.
So you need an extensive period of time to actually build the muscles, not just like two or 3 weeks.
So that's another before Jason. Before I don't mean to cut you off, but I've been working out since I was probably 13 years old. I'm now 20. I just turned 28 in September, so I have 15 years, and I think a lot of people underestimate that as well, is how long it actually takes to get to an elite level without drugs, right? Being natural, competing in a natural federation for powerlifting and being drug free my entire life, it's taken 15 years to get where I'm at. It's just, I'm elite. I don't mean that to be pretentious or anything, but the reason why I'm elite right now it is because I started so young and I've given my body enough time to develop. And I think that a lot of people want it instantly, but it takes time to make progress. And that was my two cents on that.
Cool. John?
I think like Taylor, I've been myself training for a very long time, but the difference is I was training for a very long time for powerlifting. Out of most people in the sport today, I'd say I have a lot of years in the sport, whereas a lot of people are fairly new. Mm-hmm. So I've been competing in powerlifting for 14 years. And for me, powerlifting was almost always about, and I know Jason will eventually talk about this, but using the comparison between the race car driver and the engine itself, I was always just improving my driving abilities. Most of my years growing up in powerlifting were all about strength and none of the building of muscles per se. Mm-hmm. I was on a program I'm sure everybody in this world knows, which is 531. Yeah. And I ran that for like 7 years. So constantly sitting up in the higher percentage ranges for training and always, you know, making slow progress, but never really building any mass or focusing on building mass, but always just the skill of the lifts. And so it was very different for me when I started to train with first Mike Zoros and then Jason on going into some hypertrophy and really focusing on building the mass as well. And it's just really two different perspectives with how we train and the goals of what we're trying to do with when we train. As a high school powerlifter, we probably competed every other week for 3 months. So there's really no time frame to really work in different type of, you know, cycles that you want or that we do now within my training or clients' trainings.
Mm-hmm. John, I think it's awesome that you mentioned that. You know, me personally, I started before training at commercial gyms, and with the recent years, I noticed a lot of people picking up on powerlifting. Powerlifting as a sport has gained a lot of popularity. But people are jumping onto, you know, powerlifting programs right from the get-go, whether it's 531, Shiko, Candido, powerlifting-specific programs, everybody jumping on them, making their really good progress off the first few months or even years, and they plateau. So they switch from program to program to program, but never actually taking time to build up some muscle, build up a good foundation for that. And that's one of the things that I've been noticing at commercial gyms. Jason, what's your experience and what's your, you know, what's your take on all this?
Okay, so with regards to my experience in strength and size and training for that, this invokes a wide range of areas in sport and conditioning, and also specific sports where it's measured or judged, such as in powerlifting, weightlifting, and bodybuilding. And so out of respect for the vast area that this topic has, I want to keep it to powerlifting and bodybuilding, which I've coached people to the professional and international champion levels. So now, if we want to start to look at the relationship between hypertrophy, which is muscle size and strength, in powerlifting, you really have to look no further than to go to an IPF World Championship. And what you'll see is you'll see that the elite lifters in every class share a similar level of muscular development, and they also share, barring some exceptions, similar anthropometry, especially in the lighter weight classes. And what I mean by that is like limb lengths, segment lengths, and just the joint angles that they're able to put themselves into when they're lifting. So these, of course, the elite level of muscularity, which, for example, Taylor in his weight class, the current world champion from Belarus, very similar level of muscularity to Taylor, as well as Pavel Marta from Kazakhstan and Blake Lihu from the United States, and Brandon Maddox as well. These are all lifters who, although they weigh 163 pounds on competition day. They have a very similar level of muscle mass on them. And with John, if you look at the top dogs in the 83 kilo class, you're looking at John Hack from the USA, who his segment lengths are abnormal because he's quite a tall guy. And then you have Brett Gibbs, and you have lifters of this caliber who are, again, packing a ton of muscle mass onto their frame. So just from a point-blank level of observation, you look at the best lifters in any weight class, they all got a lot of muscle on them. Now, if you want to look at what is driving muscle gain, it's not something that we can predict, but it is something where we have knowledge of what correlates well with it. So what correlates well with growing muscle? Higher volumes, higher frequencies, not getting hurt. Okay, so if you're able to work more and work harder for a longer period of time without getting hurt, chances are you're going to grow your muscles. That's the current understanding at a very, very simple level. And then chances are you're going to get stronger as well because you're growing your muscles. Now, that leads me into the factors that influence strength. And strength is comparable, strength and size for that matter, are comparable to a race car, all right? So if you had a V6 and a V8 engine line up against each other, and assuming the drivers were of equal talent, who would win that race? The V8 engine, because it has more power. More horsepower is analogous to more muscle cross-sectional area. Okay. And the skill of the race car driver is analogous to the skill of that lifter. So what we have when you look at the variables that impact strength gain are we have hypertrophy, so how big the muscle is, and then we have neural factors. And within the category of neural factors, we have two different types of coordination. So we have intermuscular coordination, and we have intramuscular coordination. Now, what correlates most highly with muscle hypertrophy, according to a review done by Chris Beardsley in 2015, is intermuscular coordination and the physiological cross-sectional area or muscle size of the relevant muscle. And so when we're looking at improving strength, we're looking at increasing the muscle size and improving the two different types of coordination that I've just outlined. So intermuscular coordination, up to 85% of maximum strength, what you're going to find is that there's an increase in the number of motor units firing, which is relative to the amount of strain the body is put under, and the rate at which they're firing. Okay? And then after that 85% of max strength threshold, it then becomes a matter of increasing the frequency at which the motor units are firing. So that's intermuscular coordination. Now, or sorry, intramuscular coordination. Now, for intermuscular coordination, which again has been identified as one of the two most dominant or influential factors in strength gain, we're looking at technique. So we're looking at the relationship between agonist and antagonist muscles. So with intermuscular coordination, what we're looking at is how the synergistic muscles work together and how they work together with antagonistic muscles as well, which have to relax and also create tension at certain times of the power lift. And so an example of intermuscular coordination being proven to really help strength is when we observe that, for example, Taylor, who recently has become much more proficient in the skill of bracing and maintaining core stiffness in his squats, we see a sudden skyrocket in his squat numbers. Okay, so bettering your technique lifts the potential on how much you're able to lift. And we also see that with other lifters such as John and Clinton Lee of Singapore. And so to summarize hypertrophy and strength into three big factors of what you had to worry about. So if your concern was to build as much muscle as you can, the main thing is that you don't want to get hurt, because that's going to take you away from training that muscle. The second thing is that you want to do as much work as you can, as often as you can, on that muscle. So in general, the research outlines 2 to 3 times per week. So if you look at three big things that you have to worry about if your goal was to build muscle or build strength. So for building muscle, the number one thing is you got to stay healthy and you have to be consistent. And I know that sounds very redundant and cliche, but it's very true. Because if you're injured and unable to train a muscle, you're not going to be able to provide it with the stimulus that it needs in order to obtain growth. Secondly, volume is the most highly correlated factor with hypertrophy. But and it was Jeremy Lenicky in 2014 who came out with that. But then there's a caveat with that, because if I were to do 15 reps for 5 sets, I'm going to accumulate a very high volume, but the weight is going to be less, right? The weight I'm using for each set in comparison to doing 6 reps and 6 sets. So we can't just look at the total amount of weight lifted as volume. It's deeper than that. So after volume, we have frequency. So it's been identified by Brad Schoenfeld that for best practice for building muscle, 2 times per week, training that muscle 2 times per week is a good place to start. So stay healthy, train lots, and train often. And that's really it for building muscle. Now, with strength, we add a intermuscular coordination component to this, where strength is very much a skill. And this is just like in basketball practice, Taylor. If you wanted to become a better free throw shooter, you wouldn't throw the ball at the hoop underhand 100 times in a row, right? You would practice the technique that is identified as the best practice in basketball. And that's how you're going to develop more consistency, right? Now, in strength training, and this is very common in beginner and intermediate lifters, it's kind of going through the motions. So it's really easy for me to just chuck a basketball at the hoop and hope it goes in. It takes actual, like, conscious thought and challenge, because it's developing a skill, to go through all of my progressions and cues and to really do it right. And a lot of lifters, they're just kind of like chucking basketball at the hoop. And then occasionally they'll put the effort in to do it right. And then on meet day, you get up onto the platform. It shouldn't be any surprise to you when your technique doesn't deliver, because you haven't practiced it in training. So if you practice like a sloppy lifter, you're going to lift like a sloppy lifter on meet day. And there's really no exceptions to that. So with the focus on skill that strength has, we're still looking at the same three things. So we're still looking at not getting injured, because if you get injured and you can't train the lift, you've got a big problem. And then 2, we're looking at, again, a high training volume. And we still have to look at the subdivisions of that, where doing sets of 10 is not the same as doing sets of 5 with heavier weights. So there, obviously there's a higher relative intensity when you're doing sets of 5 with a heavier weight than sets of 10. So when we're looking at training volume and strength, it's very much similar to hypertrophy, where doing sets of 10 with 60 to 65% of your 1 rep, it's going to be a lower relative amount of weight on the bar or relative intensity for the session to doing sets of 5 with 75% of your 1 rep. So obviously practicing with heavier weights and powerlifting is more specific to the range where you're going to compete at. And it's been identified in Russian literature And through my analysis of Boris Shako's programs in our athlete management system, that the average relative intensity for these sessions is between 68 and 72%. And so what that means, what relative intensity means, is any lift above 50% of your 1RM for squat, bench press, or deadlift then goes towards this average. So it's not just I did six sets of two at 80%, so my relative intensity was 80%. You have to factor in the workup sets as well. And the workup sets are a big part of my approach, where we prescribe many of them, because it's almost like a little technique practice before you get into the main practice. And that's just like anything in sport, right? Where in basketball, you'll have a shoot around before the practice, or in hockey, you'll go for a skate, put some pucks on net before you get into the game. It's kind of the same way, same logic that I structure my powerlifting practices on. So
is there a certain intensity level that a lifter needs to hit in order for this volume to start accumulating? Because, you know, like say somebody can do 135 for like 10 sets or like 20 sets of 10, they can accumulate a boatload of volume. But is that directly going to translate over to building up a bigger 1RM? Like, let's just say that's going to be like a 30% for them. Because literature says volume, like what most people think, volume is king, right? So you're building a ton of volume, but is there a certain intensity threshold?
I think when you train with the weight on the bar, it's not specific to increasing strength, right? This competition where you get to your 1RM, those maximum. And what you're looking at with even intramuscular coordination is up to 85% of the maximum strength. You're still increasing the number of motor units that are firing, right? So if you're only doing 30% of your maximum capabilities, you're using like a very minimal amount of the motor units which you're capable of firing under circumstances where you have to lift your maximum capability, unless you're doing power work, which is completely different. We'll not talk about that today.
Yeah, that can be another discussion.
So Jason, on an RPE scale, what do you need to be on to meet that threshold?
Okay, so this depends on how many reps you are doing in the set. So for our approach, Taylor, or John, or Alfred, I train all of you, where we typically train in the range of 2 to 4 reps per set, we're looking at percentages which are 80 to 85% per set. And if you look at the relationship between the repetitions and RPE, an RPE of 9 in powerlifting means that I left 1 rep remaining. An RPE of 8 means I left 2 reps remaining. An RPE of 7 means I left 3 reps remaining. And so if you look at how these different numbers correlate onto a table, which Mike Teixeira has created, we're typically looking at in the range of 80 to 88%, which is essentially our training range.
Now, with, like, say, Taylor's approach when he was injured, right? So he couldn't directly squat and deadlift, I believe it was. But he did a ton of volume work. So how would that – so would somebody be able to get away with a bigger one rep max just training the individual muscles, a lot of isolation work, kind of bodybuilding style, and have a direct translate to the higher 1RM? Or is there a step that's in the middle that needs to take place?
So Jason, let me answer that first, just as the athlete. So I think that it definitely helped from a muscular standpoint. Like, you could tell that my muscles were getting bigger. But as Jason was mentioning before, I didn't have any practice of squatting or deadlifting. So when I got back into squatting and when I got back into deadlifting, I literally almost had to retrain myself in muscles to mechanically squat and mechanically deadlift. So that, in a sense, yes, again, it can help build your muscle, but you still need to be practicing the lift.
And to that point, to the point of powerlifting actually being quite a skill-involved sport if you want to do it at the elite level, or if you want to reach your maximum potential and strength, which is considerable for everyone, by the way. If all that Taylor could do was practice his racing and do tons and tons of leg extensions and glute kickbacks and monster walks and hamstring curls and split squats, that's exactly what we did. So even though he couldn't put 135 pounds on his back without excruciating pain or pick it up off the ground, he practiced his racing under the guidance of Quinn Hennick over and over and over and over again. I believe it was 4 times per day, right, Taylor?
Yeah, roughly 4 to 5 times a day.
So 4 to 5 times per day for 6 months until he got back under the bar. And when he did, he was able to race all of a sudden, which is a major improvement in skill, even though he wasn't actually lifting. Right, so you always have to find a way to attack what you're doing and find a way to improve the skill, even when it's not so obvious what that way may be.
And John, you work with a lot of students from Ohio. So do you usually put them through a lot of hypertrophy work? Because most of the kids that enter university or college, they're still kind of in their growing phase, so to speak. So do you personally get them to kind of build up a little bit more before you get them right into a powerlifting program, or what's kind of your approach?
Well, first thing I do when I get athletes at Ohio State is I like to know their athletic background, like Taylor talked about him doing football. Mm-hmm. Knowing their athletic background a little bit helps you to know what previous training they might have come from, which really helps you out. From there, we generally actually run the athletes through like a 4 and an 8 RM. To see where they're roughly at strength-wise. And we put them on some general training blocks to just get them the experience they need under the bar. We have athletes that have never squatted, benched, or deadlifted before, and they get very interested and excited about powerlifting. So we have to start everybody at a different approach, not even necessarily focusing on strength or muscle gain, just focusing on getting them the experience they need under the bar. So the big thing for me is just experience to start with, experience in training, experiencing learning the lifts, and then probably focusing a little more on the mastery side of it first, getting them to understand how to perform the lifts.
So what I'd like to add to what John said is John was highlighting the importance of general preparation.
Yeah, for sure.
Really identifying good powerlifters and who has that potential to make the next step. And if you look at a lot of the top lifters, they have previous sporting backgrounds, right? These aren't lifters who just got up off the couch one day and 1 year later they were on the world podium, right?
Right.
These are lifters who have been working at some element of physical activity for the better part of their entire lives, right? And so powerlifting isn't just a sport about lifting as heavy as you can. It's also physical activity and just it's physical preparation. Like strength is so relatable to every other skill in sport. Really, it's like the gateway. Strength is the foundation of other skills in sport. And then to John's second point with regards to testing the 4 rep maxes and 8 rep maxes, I think a lot of times with new lifters and anyone who's new to strength training, they don't know how to strain or they don't know what their capabilities are. And so especially the 8 rep maximum, that's not very common. We have many reasons why we do it. But the primary reason is you get someone to do 8 reps and more often than not, their actual performance on the 8 rep test is pretty close to their 4 rep test. Mm-hmm. And not to the typical relationship of the rep max to the percentage of 1 rep max. And so that's where we get into individualizing the powerlifting training a bit through prescribing RPEs based off of custom percentage of rep maximum tables, which are created from those tests. So I just wanted to cover why we're doing that.
Yeah, and with the 4 and 8 rep max too, you can also see kind of the experience of the lifter within those two numbers. If, as Jason said, the 4 and 8 are, you know, closer, so what they might have done on their 8 was, say, 125 pounds, and their 4 was only 145 pounds. You know that that lifter is having some, is fairly new to the sport, because someone like me, my 8 rep max would be a lot different than my 4 rep max. So it tells you a lot about the lifter's background, just measuring those two numbers as well.
And that's because the lifter may not be performing up to their true rep max capabilities.
Right.
That's why we do this testing.
Right.
Okay, so to kind of wrap, like, we got gone through quite a bit of like really good discussions here. So to wrap it up, Jason, what are some key takeaways on this topic with muscle size to muscle strength? What are some key takeaways for our listeners here?
So in conclusion, muscle size and intramuscular coordination correlate most highly with strength improvement, according to Chris Gersley. Now, if you wanted to improve either strength or muscle size, you want to train it often, you want to train it with a high volume, and you don't want to get hurt. It's pretty similar. Where it differentiates is strength, there's more of a focus on the skill as well, whereas with hypertrophy and, for instance, in bodybuilding, you're looking at more exercise variety within that. So training different muscles rather than squat, bench press, deadlift. And that's, of course, just for the visual improvement which it gives. So, 3 main takeaways: frequency, volume, don't get hurt.
All right, so that wraps up our first episode of our podcast. We hope to bring you guys a lot more informative content in the near future, and also some great guests. So stay tuned. Thank you guys for listening, and see you guys next time.
Thanks, everyone. See ya.